small poem, but Anatoly was talking about wolves and Siberia, so that and we have something in common because his grandfather was in Siberia about the same time my grandmother was there, more or less. So this poem is called On the Other Side of the Moon, and this is a quote from my grandmother. Your life was not your own. You could not even kill yourself. When an able-bodied convict committed suicide, the guards punished the whole war gang. Some women went mad. They wandered into the woods in winter. It was a quick death. So this is Maria Kim Nosoy, the Gulag by Kalamuk Labor Camp, 1932-1936. It's monologue. Look at my hands, girls. Marusia, Anna, look at them. They no longer bleed. See, my calluses are so thick you can hack them with glass, and still they will not bleed. Hooves of a beast, that's what they are. Marusia, Anna, girls, don't look at me so. Don't hold me down. Let go. Let go of my arms. I was truly frightened. So frightened I searched beneath my skirts for a tail. But see here, all I found is a woman's cunt. And oh, I can hear him pant. Listen, listen to him. There he goes, over there in the trees. He knocks on our door each night, you know. Softly, softly, all muffled, seeking me out. In my dreams, his hot breath sears my neck. Rough tongue laps my nipple. Oh, let go of me, girls. For Christ's sake, let go of me. Have no fear. I will not join him tonight. Tonight I will touch the face of the moon that rises over spruce, fir, and pine, while he nuzzles the other side of the moon with his lonely snout. Oh, girls, let go of me now. See how calm I am? Listen to him howling with grief as he trails his tail in the mud. Let him wait. When snow petals the moss, only then, in the thick of desire, will I go to him. With his fangs deep in my flesh, we shall sin against life, and together vermilion this burning land. In spring, I shall carpet the clearing in wild strawberries. You shall feed, girls, on my sin.
Thanks. I'm a little nervous about reading this because maybe it might offend some men. It might be a little harsh, but it's true. So bear that in mind. Her coming. Perched on a quivering cliff, crouched under a wave of singed grass. Sensing when to pounce or stay, perched high, crouched low, calculating the positions, considering what was said earlier, the meaning of lingerie, excusing just the one time. She will never come the way you think, the way they do on screen. All business from behind, with his sneakers digging up the bed sheets, pinning his full weight on her like some sled dog running in place. No, she won't surface like that, panties throwing her off, rubbing raw as a leash. And desperate, you try to bait her with the dog's made-up face and moan, driving her deep into a cave, deserving to be first for her enduring patience, storing energy like an unruly sun, rising night and day, over and over, and overlooked for not needing to be turned on. Coax her with all the feelings owed to a distant thing come close. Feed her flesh till you are skinless and light enough for her to carry in a flash, back to the womb growing, until you trigger her weak spot. The desire to share, or your fear of being alone, without thought, without skin, that drives you to stop, roll over, and make her play dead to please. And this is where it's meaning to men, I guess. The male orgasm, so clumsy and spoiled, like a child bursting in the room, killing chances of her coming, bringing the resurrection of your life before death.
Work gets stronger and stronger every time you hear it. It's amazing. Next up, please welcome Sandra Terry. Is it? Yeah. I'll say that's last call.
Well, this is my first time here, and I didn't bring anything to read because I don't write poetry. But I flicked through all the books, and I picked out this book, and I picked out this particular poem, and then I'm reading the back of it, and I'm discovering that the lady who wrote it is here, and it's Patricia. So I'm very honoured to read one of her poems this evening. It's called Angel. When did you first know you were an angel? I knew in fits and starts, but not until I was 15, when the peacock spread its fan in my back bedroom. No one has ever seen that back bedroom. No one has ever gotten in with the noise and the clutter, but I am good to those who come to me and give children rides on my wings. You know these things all your life when you were cast out to be special and walk the eternal sidelines from observation point to observation point and can't see the decay of sobriety, only the gloss caked on. The fake grandfather clock clashes out the hour. Without a doubt, I find myself wedged between two handsome men, wrenched in drunken argument. I do not dare to intervene because each law is judged by its own kind. And everybody minds their own business once they've reached the age of 18. Everyone must have wondered what it was like to handle a star in your hand without the benefit of a telescope. They send out their children with fishing nets during meteorite showers. My platform in my back bedroom gives me scope to leap almost to my death, to kiss the moon, embrace the galaxies, dodge the asteroids, and follow my constellation home.
Gorgeous, both of you. Thanks very much. Next up, please welcome James Stafford.
Hello. I'm not going to read a poem of my own either because I don't really write, but I've been experimenting with setting some poetry that I like to music, and I was going to attempt to share one of those experiments. So this is Grief by Emily Dickinson. I measure every grief I meet with analytic eyes. I wonder if it weighs like mine or has an easier size. I wonder if they bore it long, or did it just begin? I cannot tell the date of mine, it feels so old a pain. I wonder if it hurts to live, and if they have to try, and whether could they choose between, they would not rather die. I wonder if the years have passed, some thousands on the course of early hurt, if such a lapse could give them any pause. Or do they go on aching still through centuries above, enlightened to a larger pain by contrast with the love? The grieved are many, I am told, the reason deeper lies. Death is but one and comes but once, and only nails the eyes. There's grief of cold and grief of want, the kind they call despair. There's banishment from native eyes and sight of native air. And though I cannot tell the kind correctly yet to me, a piercing comfort is afoot in passing Calvary, to note the fashions of the cross of those who stand alone, still fascinated to presume that some are like my own.
Portia, please welcome Portia.
I'm actually a tourist. I'm here with James. We're wearing matching stripy tops, but that's an image. So I'm going to read a poem off my phone. It's set in Oxford, which is a little known town in England, where me and James became friends. St. Giles. When the library shut, I would run the narrow stitch of my bike tyres along Oxford's spine, calming us both to see apple trees blossom in Jericho. With no hills to trouble her, Oxford had time to sort her papers, thumbing through pink, yellow, and mauve. Before the sun set on the day's affairs. And we tumbled into the velvet night, where bow ties sat smartly on the brightest and the best throats. I would have run away from that November night ball, where you reached for my hand in the crowd. But my bright dress contained my panic, and I bit little walking stitches into that rotted sepia road. At night, Jericho was a mausoleum of flowers, lighter since the forced surrender of their colours. Hundreds of hurried reliefs in wood and metal commemorated their contribution to the day, and bunches of brass bells hung by the roadside. It snowed that night as I took refuge on James's floor. I slept silently, laid out on my side, sweating delicately into my dress. And in the morning, the flowers had been repainted for the wake.
I love the idea that these two were wandering around, like, spreading their poetry. Absolutely stunning. You should keep going. And come back here. Thanks very much, Portia. Next up, please welcome Seamus Harrington.
Thanks, Jennifer. Tight nylon fishnets, ladders run from the bottom of hay reeks each fall. Full street still at bay, without one reservation, campers roam freely. The northern lights, visible from Donegal, there'll be white blackbirds. Picky woodpecker in staccato is echo, rapid fire sculpture. Mobile dog wash. It's just across the rows of deadly spinning wheels, where every puppy shows the cleanest pair of heels. Pegasus. Parts merge to enchant, then Zeus, he is gone in one lightning bolt, blowtorch sheet metal. Pre-dawn, I'll return to spot stars on his flanks, hippocrene shod, wings brushing through north. Thank you.
Sleeping ghosts. They call it an archaeological field trip, but I know better. Dodging the broken, gnarly stone, sculptures of stone and intermittent bone. Are these bones any more beautiful now? The queen of everything is a handful of marrow, though human flesh is too salty for some, as is etched on the crypts and show off their wares. At the correct angle of sunlight, stacked collected, no name recognizable, but collected, rocked to moss and lichen, names of their attenuation to an archaeologist's sight. Thanks.
that we have Mariko.
By extension, the spider plant sits on a high shelf. Watering is unlikely. Her pale roots bound in a Chinese jardiniere, leaves like ancient skin. But she has daughters who dangle in the window sunlight. Short-leaved, pristine, they are her dancing girls.
Mentioned that Mari has a new collection with it's a part of a trio of writers from Douglas Press. I highly recommend it. It's beautiful. Next up, please welcome Grace O'Donoghue.
I just want to say a few words about this poem before I read it. A few weeks ago, I asked my friend what his tattoo was about. He's got an angel on his shoulder right here and a sleeping devil down here. He was saying that for him, the angel is the feminine, the light and the purity, and the devil is like the masculine and the rawness and the shadow, and that he lives 90% in the angel, and the devil is nearly something to be contained, and the devil on his tattoo is sleeping. And he said in France, where he's from, there's a saying, let the sleeping wolf lie. It's not wolf pink tonight, but... And all I could think at the time was, I want to poke that wolf and wake it up, you know? So I was thinking about it for 3 weeks, and I couldn't get it on paper, and then today I finally did, so I said I'd bring it here. They say, let the sleeping wolf lie, but his sleep calls to me. The rise and fall of his warm ribs haunt me at night in my dreams. I wander up the forest path, waking angels trying to call me back. Don't go, don't do it, they say, tear stains on their faces making blinking steam tracks. I know where the sleeping wolf lies. I've seen it in my dreams. I've made this journey in celestial times, but an infinity of unknown realities await me. I touch the final tree before the clearing to make sure I am really there. Deep breaths, head spins pulsing, inevitable fate-filled wind in my hair. I have seen him change, seen the transformation in the wolf's eyes. I've seen the domesticated hazel brown turn black and deepen, penetrating mine. I've seen the wolf unveiled in all his masculine glory, but I have stayed, not needing to run and hide, stood rooted, frozen, taking charge of this fairy story. And he, recognizing, teeth bared and narrow in a smile, also rooted, but then moving on, knowing he already consumed my mind. And so I find myself in front of the wolf's cave. I creep in, hands and knees in the dust, the path of my arrival behind me unpaved. No going back, no returning from the warm bristles of lust. And it is here that the sleeping wolf lies. Here he comes to take his rest. Not knowing what his waking world will bring, I crouch down, and on his warm, convex ribs, I contently lay my head.
That was our five-word champion of the evening. And next up, please welcome Karina Kakin.
I just want to say that this is the first time I've been here, and it's the first time I've actually been to a poetry night. So, and I actually know tomorrow I'll freak out at the thought that I was here talking down a microphone. So I've just picked this one, and it's nice and short. It's called Outside. Afterwards, under the eiderdown, we lie inert, alert to night winds that hurry up the hill, playing hide and seek among the trees, lulling us to sleep, sure of ourselves and only the sounds outside.
Thank you. Thanks very much, Corey. Hope you'll find poetry events wherever you're going. Try that some more. That's great. Now, next up, please welcome Kitari Guno, something like that.
This poem was actually also written in, I think you called it, the small unknown town of Oxford. So I promise this isn't a conspiracy, or if it is, I'm not aware of it. Okay, and I think the only thing that you need to know is the Isis is a river. Small tragedies. One. I'm sorry your flowers died. I wish they hadn't dried up in the sun. I could have used the company when it rained. But I did all I could, even found the vase I didn't know we had at the back of the cupboard. And you might say it was both their home and their coffin, but I want to say no such thing. Two. It's true they were resplendent in the evening light, but not more so than that tiny life suspended above the Isis by a golden thread, not even as thick as yolk. That precious triviality dangling off the web barely hanging to my window. Three. As soon as the petals started falling, you mourned the entire bouquet. Had I not shown them to you, I'm not sure you would even have noticed the quiet virgins discreetly poking out their delicate heads into the morning glow. Four. We don't stop saying flowers are beautiful, or giving them, or planting them, just because they die. The fact that they shed their withered skin, those multicolored scales which go from sweet to sour and soon start smelling too strong, is neither here nor there. Matters no more than the fact I will leave from here soon. Five. We do not honor life by mourning it, but by doing the small things that it demands of us. Cutting the stems carefully, arranging the flowers, putting them in water, giving them a chance for the hell of it. If love is as meaningful as you say, why should we have any less of it? The flowers are dead, yes, but look, the fern is still thriving.
Did you want to read one yourself? Or no? What's your name again?
Patricia Chalmers.
Patricia Chalmers, is it?
Okay. I'm not a poetry writer, but I do enjoy reading poetry. So also I've come with two others who have been here before. So. This is written by Louis de Paul. Okay. Speckled love. The lake is a color never seen before in this bright district. A silk scarf from a back street shop in the Orient. Russet with a hint of saffron through it. Three sisters who hang out their hair there, rinsing it out again. Before their dangerous secret was betrayed. A midwife up to her knees in the roaring water, washing her rough hands.